Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to this very special, very mini interview episode of the Empire Podcast. Carey Mulligan is one of our favourite actors, and she's been storming it on the big screen ever since she burst through with An Education. Since then, she's displayed admirable taste in working with some of the best filmmakers around, from the Coen brothers to Baz Luhrmann, and has evinced a knack for creating memorable, flawed characters. Nowhere is that clearer than in Paul Dano's Wildlife, which opened here on Friday. She came at the Pod booth recently to have a chat about that movie and more with John Nugent. Do please enjoy.
So we are thrilled to have Carey Mulligan on the Empire Podcast. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Very well, thank you. We're here to talk about Wildlife, fantastic film. So beautiful and kind of sad as well. And it's based on the novel by Richard Ford. Had you read the book before?
No, I hadn't read actually anything of Richard Ford's, so I read the script first.
Right.
And it was Paul Dano who directed the film.
Yes.
He read the book about 4 years before that, and he felt very connected to the story. So, and having always wanted to direct, he sort of felt like that was the first thing that he wanted to do.
Mm. And I'm always interested to know when a film's based on a book, like how important that is. Did you refer to the book when...
Yeah, we totally did. I mean, that was, you know, it's always helpful, I think. It's always great to have source material, and there's so much detail that you can pick out and use. But the great thing about Paul's relationship with Richard Ford was, you know, the exchange they had right at the beginning when Paul got the rights to the book. Essentially, Richard Ford kind of released him from being, you know, worrying about being too faithful to it. So it is very faithful to the book, but Richard Ford said, look, my book is my book and your picture is your picture and you should go make your film. So we kind of had a sense of freedom around the original material that we didn't feel we had. We weren't betraying it if there was something that wasn't totally the same as it was in the book.
Yeah. And you play a woman whose marriage is sort of falling apart, but it's more complex than that, and it's kind of surprising. It really wrong-footed me in a lot of directions. Was that part of the appeal, this sort of slightly surprising character?
Yeah, I think you kind of don't know what she's going to do. And that's my experience reading it, is that, yeah, it seems, you know, you meet this sort of classic American family and you think you kind of have a measure of them. And, you know, it seems like a sort of dutiful 50s housewife husband and their sort of sweet son, and then the husband leaves to go and fight this forest fire, and then she starts to unravel, and you kind of page to page don't know what direction she's going to go in. And that was quite exciting to play.
Yeah, because she does make some bad choices, but you also sort of see where she's coming from.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think, you know, she's spinning out a bit. I mean, for a couple of reasons. One of them being that her husband has left, and it's 1916.
Yeah.
She's got a 14-year-old to look after, so I think she's sort of in survival mode. But I think also, like, she's spent 14 years being perfect and really putting effort into being a perfect wife and a perfect mother. And then he leaves, and I think there's sort of this sense of injustice that he can just walk out on their life and she can't. And so I think she goes through this kind of somewhat of an identity crisis. Like, if I'm not a mum and I'm not a wife, like, who am I outside of those things? I can't remember if I have a life outside of those things.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different things going on in there. And she does make a lot of mistakes, but I kind of love that. I kind of like that you're seeing someone just really fucking everything up. And, like, you kind of, you know, we just don't see that in women on screen.
Yes.
You just see, like, great, saintly, dutiful women doing the right thing.
Yeah.
It's just not true of everyone.
Yeah. And it's quite specific to that time period as well, isn't it? That's a time when, you know, there was this sort of this feminist awakening almost.
Yeah, it's just, we're just coming into that period. So she's sort of slightly ahead of it. But it was, you know, the pressure had been building for so long. And I think you're starting to see that crack in women a little bit around that time.
Yeah. And then you have Jake Gyllenhaal as your husband and Ed Oxenbould as your son. So what was the rehearsal process like? Did you get a chance to sort of acclimatise as a family?
No, actually, we didn't at all.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
It was classic indie filmmaking. So we started in Montana, me and Ed and Paul. The production started in Montana, and we shot for 4 days there, and then we moved to Oklahoma to shoot everything else.
Okay.
It's too expensive to stay in Montana. So we didn't have Jake till we got to Oklahoma. So Ed and I had to shoot the, you know, a couple of quite big scenes without having done anything really as a family.
Wow.
And then we moved. And then when we were in the set of our house, which is sort of where a lot of the film is shot, it kind of felt like we were rehearsing the night before we shot a scene and that kind of stuff, but before that we kind of just had to wing it a little bit, which is fine.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't show us.
No,
magic,
and I think,
I guess.
Like, you know, Jake and I have known each other for 10 years,
right?
So we've kind of knew how to work together, and we had a little bit of kind of night before rehearsal when he got there with Ed, so they felt comfortable.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, it's set in Montana, which has this, it's some beautiful sort of cinematography. Mm. It has this sort of otherworldly quality to it. Does that help, having that sort of remote location? Does it help the performance?
I don't know. I think, you know, you do feel like a tiny thing in a huge landscape.
Mm.
So I think it's sort of, there's an isolation that all these characters are experiencing that sort of gets heightened by being in the midst of this enormous landscape. And it looks so beautiful.
Mm.
And you are kind of reminded of the wilderness constantly, and like how unpredictable life is. And so all of those things played in. And it was beautiful for us to start there. It was so nice. I mean, Oklahoma was great, but Montana is just one of the most beautiful places in the world.
Yeah, very mountainous. Was it shooting in winter as well?
Yeah, we started actually around Halloween, because I remember there was trick-or-treating happening when we were there, so it was like last week of October into November and December. Yeah,
no, it's really beautiful. And as he's mentioned, it's directed by Paul Dano, he's a long-time actor, of course. We know him from many films, but this is his first time as a director. Mm. So what is it like being directed by an actor? Is that different?
I mean, it was different for me in that I was kind of more nervous at the beginning.
Oh, really?
Well, he's such a good actor, and I just didn't want to, you know... I don't know, I think I was sort of intimidated by his work. But yeah, I think it is. I mean, I think I've worked with lots of directors who are really intuitive and smart about acting and thoughtful, but I think he is particularly... His work is so instinctive, and I think he kind of, you know, imbued the whole production with that. And he's really honest as well. Mm-hmm. I think he sort of doesn't... You know, everything he does is very honest. All of his work is very truthful and has such integrity. So I think that all kind of played into the way that he directed the film. And I think he also, you know, the way that he worked with Diego Garcia, the cinematographer, in that the camera in the film doesn't really move unless it has to. So it just allows a lot of space for the actors to kind of do stuff. It doesn't, you know, there's no kind of hitting a mark or worrying about your eye line and things like that. We moved within the frame, and there was a lot of freedom in that.
Was it? Did you notice any like noticeable differences between other directors and acting directors? Is there like a sort of shorthand that actors can have?
A little bit, but also I suppose because Paul and Jake and I have all been friends for so long,
right?
We had a shorthand anyway,
right? Right.
So I probably wouldn't be able to. But he certainly. There was a scene where Jake leaves to go and fight the fire, and we have this enormous, almighty row. And I remember when we were shooting that, we took a day to shoot it, I think. But we got halfway through and we kind of got a bit stuck, and he identified it immediately and you know, sort of fixed the problem, where I think maybe a director who didn't understand the process might have sort of pushed it a bit or tried to get through it in a different way. But Paul understood that it was basically pointless to keep going and that we should just change it completely and do something different, because... You know, I think he'd had that same experience. So in that sense, I think he had an eye on the performance that maybe a non-actor wouldn't have.
Yeah. Would you ever consider directing?
Never in 10 years. No, I've no interest. I don't have the skill set for it, nor the patience.
Yeah.
Or the, you know, it's just a huge job, and there's so much outside of the creative side that goes on, that Paul actually did an incredible job of never letting us feel. But, you know... I know that at the same time as being an incredible director to us, he was probably in another room, you know, getting told that he wanted 30 extras, but now he only has 15, and we lost the location for Tuesday, and now we've got to shoot in this, you know, all the kind of constant admin that's going on, especially with indie filmmaking. It's not my bag at all. But I mean, he did an incredible job.
He did. He really did. But, I mean, you've worked with some incredible directors in your time now. You've Paul Dano, but also Steve McQueen and Michael Mann and the Coen brothers. You know, what do you look for in a director? Like,
some people are just... You just know that they've got a vision, a unique vision that nobody else has. So I think that's the case with Steve. I think that's, you know, Dee Reese. I think that's Nicholas Winding Refn. Like, they just see the world in a different way. And, you know, with all of those, I've wanted to be a part of whatever they're doing, you know. But generally someone who just makes you feel kind of taken care of. I think I don't want kind of to be mollycoddled. I don't want someone kind of applauding me after every take and telling me I'm fantastic. I just want someone to be super honest. and someone that I can trust and whose taste I agree with, and someone who can kind of push me in the right directions. And I think that's what Paul really shares with Steve. And it's interesting, they've worked together, but Paul, you know, was really good at identifying the moments where I kind of maybe would hold back. I have more of a tendency towards restraint than I do to being, to doing too much, mm-hmm. or overacting. My problem will be more that I would tend to do less. And I think Paul was really good sometimes at sort of getting me out of that.
Interesting. How interesting. So I'm almost loath to ask this question, but there's been a lot of awards buzz about this film, you know, rightly so as well. But how do you feel about, you know, the onset of awards season? Do you enjoy that, the sort of the big shows and the parties and the ceremonies? Or?
I mean, I think, you know, I've only ever really done it properly once, for an education, and I didn't enjoy that as much as I should have done. I took it all way too seriously, and I wish I could go back and tell 24-year-old me to just chill out, because I was so afraid all the time, and I was so convinced that they'd made a mistake. And I think if I could go back, I'd be like, buddy, it's a party, you know.
Yeah,
calm down.
Yeah,
but so I didn't, and I wish I could do. But yeah, it's, you know, it's great. And but there is an extent to which all films that come out in October and November have awards buzz until they don't. So it's never anything to get massively excited about. The great thing about it, though, is that it encourages people to see the film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, particularly with independent film, you rely on that kind of chat to get people to see it.
Yeah.
So that's a great thing.
Yeah. And it's done the sort of festival circuit as well. It premiered at Sundance.
We did all of them.
Well, literally all of them.
Like, yeah, we did. We did a lot of festivals. Yeah.
Yeah. Great. And was that a good experience, like getting out to...
Everything. Do you know, all the press has been great because we get to hang out.
Yeah.
You know, we're all friends for, you know, a decade, and now we get to kind of go around doing Q&As together. So it's not like doing normal Q&As where it's sort of stilted and weird. This is, it's sort of fun. And so it's been really good.
And do you get a chance to watch much films while you're out there?
Nothing
at all.
No, I've never once seen a film. Oh, I saw A King's Speech at Telluride when I was there with Never Let Me Go, but other than that, I don't think I've ever seen a single
film. You just fly in and then,
well, you're just in and out. Yeah. It's such a shame, and you bump into other actors, and you know, who've all done brilliant work, and you want to see it, but I'll likely watch it on a DVD in December over Christmas. That's the truth of it. But I can't, there's so many things I want to see this year.
Of course. How good are you at keeping up with stuff then? Have you seen anything good recently?
I've seen A Star Is Born.
Okay, yeah.
Which I loved.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen anything else since, I saw A Quiet Place.
Okay, yeah, that's
back
brilliant.
Which I loved.
Yeah.
But I think it's the last time I went to the cinema. I have two kids.
Yeah.
They're tiny. I'm not ever allowed to go anywhere.
But you must be, are you on the Academy or anything? Do you get award screeners?
Yeah,
I get screeners.
So that's a handy So generally what happens is over Christmas, between Christmas and New Year, I watch like a film a day.
Right.
And then I don't watch films for another year. But yeah, no, I'm excited. But there are some things I really want. I'm going to make a concerted effort to see in the cinema, like Roma.
Yeah.
Because it feels, I suppose it's a Netflix thing, but I imagine you have to see that on a big screen.
I would, yeah. I think it's my favourite film of the year.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
I want to see The Favourite as well.
That that's very good. Yeah. Congratulations on Wildlife. It's a fantastic film. And Kerry Mulligan, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
And that was Kerry Mulligan. And that is it for this very brief interview episode of the Empire Podcast. Keep your eyes peeled for more interview and spoiler specials heading your way over the next few weeks. And don't forget to check out Wildlife in cinemas now. We gave it 4 stars, which is a recommendation, and then some. Thanks so much for listening. See you next time. Bye.